As our listeners in Virginia know, the ginger gold is ready for picking. Early Paula Reds made their appearance in late August here in New England. Then they're pushed aside in September for Northern Spies and Macintosh. Then some of us go back for the McCowns in October. We're talking apples. The U.S. Apple Association says that on average, Americans eat an estimated 16.5 pounds of fresh apples every year. There are 7,500 apple growers. And if you're looking for the definitive cookbook, look no further, or rather, seek no further. That's an apple. It's the Westfield Seek No Further, which was born right here in Westfield, Massachusetts. The book, however, is the Apple Lover's Cookbook. Amy Traverso is the senior food and home editor of Yankee Magazine and the author, and she joins us in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you.
Boy, what is it about apples? Why do people, I mean, there are people who, you know, you get your Macintosh and then you get your McCown and you know the difference. Why is that?
Unlike most fruits, people know that this is a varietal fruit that comes in different forms. You know, if you go to the supermarket, you go over to the apple bin and you have Gala and Fuji and Macintosh and Granny Smith. So there's just this, everyone is kind of raised with this knowledge that apples are varied and that they're interesting and you can try different ones for different things.
And you have 59 popular varieties with a picture and sort of a description of what they are best for and when they come in and where they are. I'm looking at Newtown Pippin, Northern Spy, Opalescent, and Pinata. That's just four across a page. But, you know, no Red Delicious, for instance.
The Red Delicious I left out on purpose. I'm not a huge fan of the Red Delicious.
Me neither.
There was one time where the Red Delicious was truly delicious. Over time, growers were favoring the fruits that happened to be more, you know, uniformly red, that traveled well.
Mushy.
Mushy fruits that you could wax and leave out for, you know, several weeks at a time. And it really brought the apple industry back. But now, happily, people are rediscovering the incredible apple heritage that we have in this country.
Well, let's talk about a couple. The Westfield Seek No Further from right here in Westfield, Massachusetts, native there. When I see the picture, and we'll have pictures at our website of these apples, but when I see the picture, I recognize that kind of slightly freckled skin. It's like red, but it has slight freckles of yellow, but when I see it, I know it's going to be a really snappy, tart apple.
Yes.
You know, I know that it's not one of the mushier,
yes,
you know, Red Delicious. Did it get invented in Westfield? How does that happen?
A lot of the apples that we have today were just sprung up from seeds, and people would plant seeds, and they would get whatever tree they got, because apples don't grow true from seed.
And there was a Johnny Appleseed.
There was a Johnny Appleseed, and what a lot of people don't realize, he did plant apples from seed. Now, apples, if you plant a seed from, I'm holding right now an L-Star apple in my hand. Mm-hmm. So if you plant a seed from this apple, you will not get another L-Star. You'll get some bizarre combination of the maternal and paternal genes. Chances are it'll taste horrible. It might be a different size or color. In order to really reproduce the apples that you want, you have to graft them. But Johnny Appleseed went around planting seeds because he knew that mostly what people on the frontier wanted was cider. And you can take a pretty unappetizing apple and make a decent cider out of it. Mm-hmm. And now with the thousands and thousands of seeds that he planted all over the Northwest Territories at the time, some of them were good eating apples, and those would be grafted and preserved. And by the time the start of the 20th century rolled around, there were 14,000 apple varieties being grown in this country.
Wow.
Which is remarkable because that's not a native fruit.
So it's largely because of Johnny. And others grafting. Well, I mean, there's so much to talk about, but also to taste, because you have these apples in front of you. You just picked up one. Now, you're an apple lover. Are there some of these here that you have not tasted?
Yes. I spent 5 years working on this book, and I still regularly encounter apples I have never seen before, which I love. It's so exciting. So a couple of these are a little more familiar. I try to choose the heirloomy ones because they're kind of fun and different.
And what do you mean by heirloom?
Yeah, heirloom is a funny word because typically with a tomato, say, an heirloom is a plant grown from the seeds of another plant. With apples, we apply it sort of loosely to antique apples. Apples that have sort of history, and mm-hmm. in that way they're heirlooms. But since you can't plant apples from seed and expect to get the same variety, there's not really that botanic definition.
Okay. You like heirlooms, and in fact, you go to an apple orchard where there's a special heirloom aisle?
Yeah, there are several growers around. Well, actually, a lot of New England growers, even if they're growing mostly Macintosh and Cortland and familiar apples, they'll have a few trees that are unusual, and it's always fun to find out what those are. Neshoba Valley Winery has apple orchards out in Bolton, Massachusetts. They also have sort of an off-limits special heirloom apple grove or
by invitation only.
Yes, you have to call ahead. You can see if they have enough fruit. They let you go and pick. And boy, you can encounter some great historic apples. The names are so beautiful and poetic. Winter Banana, Black Twig, Cox's Orange Pippin, Hudson's Golden Gem. There was a lot of boosterism in these names. Yeah. A lot of the places, the trees were named after the towns where they sprung up.
Wonderful. And, well, you do have the apple there that you've never tasted. Now, what is
yes.
that?
Yes. Okay, this one I'm excited to try because the grower at Kimball Farm told me this is great. This is called a Swiss gourmet apple. Would you like to taste it?
I would. Let's swing a knife there. It's got a whitish meat. It's almost leaning towards the yellow, so I'm worried that it... You know, it's going to be more like a Mac.
You've been conditioned to fear the yellow flesh. But this, I hear, is a good cooking apple. I'm getting honey and lemon. I like this apple very much. It reminds me a little bit of Honeycrisp. This is not a brand new apple, but it is really quite nice.
It is. I would say it leans more towards the sweeter mm-hmm. than the snappy, the really snappy, snappy ones that... I hate to say it, but they, well, like the Macaun.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That does seem more white meat.
Yeah. Macaun and Macintosh, I think, are terrific for applesauce. That's how I use them. I think, especially if you cook your applesauce with the skins, which I really recommend, cook them with the skins and then you run it through a food mill to get the skins out. Because you just get all that flavor extracted out of the skin and you get a much better sauce.
Well, now we're talking about cooking, and there's so much in here. We'll have some recipes at our website, but just in the short term here, what are some tips for cooking with apples?
We have this abundance of apples, even in supermarkets. The problem that poses is, what do I do with the Gala? What do I do with the Granny Smith? Which one do I put in a pie? So what I did is I organized the apples into four categories. There's firm tart apples, which the Granny Smith would be one. The firm sweet apple, now I think this Swiss gourmet that we just tasted, another example would be Golden Delicious. And these, when I say firm, that's because the flesh doesn't melt and get all mushy when you cook it. And then we have tender tart apples like the Macaun or the Macintosh, and tender sweet apples, which are, you know, Fujis and Galas, and they tend to have tender flesh and they're nice sweet eating apples. I generally eat those out of hand. So, as a rule, I think firm tart apples, good for baking, good for rich desserts where you want that acidity. Firm sweet apples are great for baked desserts like cakes where you want a slightly sweeter apple, but you don't want the flesh to get all soft. Then the tender tart would be sauces, and generally the tender sweet are good for eating out of hand or for something where you want it to cook quickly like a pancake.
I get my apples at Honeypot Hill here in the Massachusetts area, and they insist put them right in the fridge. So what's another tip like that?
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, so the best way to store apples, you want to put them in paper bags, and if you have a cool cellar, that's the best place for it. If you have a produce drawer in your refrigerator, that's the second best place for it.
Okay. How about in pie?
I think the best pies are made with a variety of apples. I always recommend combining firm sweet and firm tart apples. One tip I have for deep dish apple pie, which is the challenge for people, usually the problem with deep dish apple pie is you get a big gap between the top crust and the fruit, and so you have that pocket of air. It's not so appealing. You pre-cook the apples just a little bit, just briefly in a Dutch oven. You just cook them with some sugar and spices so they lose a little bit of volume. And then when you put them in the pie shell, they're already cooked down, and they'll go all the way up to the top crust, and you get that gorgeous high-rise pie.
Amy Traverso, her book is The Apple Lover's Cookbook. She's an editor at Yankee Magazine. Amy, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.